to the NBA Roadshow, episode number 181. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me, unfortunately. He had to stay back home in Las Vegas. It is a long and expensive trip over here to Moscow, Russia, where I'm currently sitting with Sebastian Vindel Martinez from MMA Nyit.
Yeah, getting better and better at pronouncing it every time.
obviously, Swedish website, good friend of ours for a long time. You made the trip as well. Mm-hmm. I want to get into this card in a little bit. I want to get into the Moscow experience. But first, I do have to say I want to offer my apologies to everybody that I couldn't do a half episode after this past weekend. I really wanted to, man. That card.
I was one of those people, so you know, waiting for it.
You know what I mean? And I wanted to so bad. I mean, especially that card was just off the hook. And it was in my home city of Dallas, Texas, no less. You know what I mean? It was tough, but I had to admit, unfortunately, we had Simon Simano, who was on vacation over the weekend. He had some pre-planned vacation, and I think most people know by now we're a man down in recent months or so. And then I, unfortunately, had a really bad travel situation as well. I mean, not terrible, but it took a while to get the finances approved on this trip. So I was going to go straight from Dallas to here in Russia, but what I ended up having to do was actually go from Dallas back to Vegas on Sunday, and then on Monday just turn around and go Vegas to Dallas to Heathrow to Moscow. So bottom line is, it sounds like I'm making excuses. I just ran out of time.
And you kind of are.
Well, I kind of am, but I just ran out. I'm not offering excuses. I'm giving an explanation.
Oh, I like it.
But I'm also offering my apologies as well. So it was a fantastic card. I mean, literally, no joke, Seb, I could sit here and probably do a post-fight show now. And room service calling?
I think so. Yeah. It was just a couple of beers. Perhaps we shouldn't disclose the amount.
Beverages on the way. Yeah, man, there's a little too much.
our one guy can't carry all this.
Sorry, sir. That's a little bit too much for us. Yeah, but seriously, I could sit here and do a whole post show now on USC 228. It was great. I know you end up watching cards in the wee hours of the morning over in Europe. But I mean,
yeah.
Did this one still resonate for you? Did it keep you on the edge of your seat?
Well, I've got to be honest. This one we did not watch live. Me and actually Stefan, who's on the bed right now, that came out wrong.
That came out totally wrong. So he is using the bed. I should say that we are actually in my hotel room here. We're at the host hotel, the Hyatt Regency Petrovsky Park, a very fine hotel, I might say, with reasonable, affordable rates with the exchange rate. 70 rubles to a dollar, I believe, is how it works. So, anyway, he is just using the bed as a workstation,
exactly,
sir.
Exactly. Point being, we were actually at his summer house on the east coast of Skåne in the south.
Fancy.
Yeah, so we had a pretty nice weekend there in the nature. So it was me, Stefan, my girlfriend, and one of her friends. So we actually ended up watching it the day after. Out in the nature.
Probably a better experience anyway, right? Like not trying to keep yourself up the whole time.
Yeah, it did give us a chance to get the most out of like the situation and just being where we were. I mean, it was I thought it was a really great card top to bottom. I thought that unfortunately Dodson Bermuda or I mean Rivera didn't really deliver.
Right.
But I thought that was like the only real dud.
That was the only one.
It was just fireworks everywhere, from start to finish. And I mean, great showing. I mean, as a European and just seeing the sorrow in his eyes, I mean, it was a little sad seeing Darren Till fall the way he did. Mm. Because honestly, I do feel like there was a big difference in quality between them. As we say in Swedish, we say a difference of class, and not class in terms of how classy one is, but in terms of like tiers.
Like when we say there's levels to this game.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
It.
And there was levels to that game, and it was pretty obvious. Jessica Andrade succeeded at frightening me once more through the screen. Jesus Christ. Wow. I mean, She did a number on Cole K, which, I mean,
That was sad. And Carolina, I don't know how much the broadcast picked it up, but clearly in tears.
Yeah.
And that's hard to see anybody that emotional after a fight, especially she's so sweet. She's so nice.
Yeah.
She's always got
then
the little wink.
She went on Instagram and apologized.
Completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
It's completely unnecessary. But, you know what? I will say this, though. Darren Till, I do like the way he handled himself afterwards. Mm-hmm. I like very, very much reminded me of like when Conor McGregor lost to Nate Diaz.
I was thinking that
too.
Yeah,
just owning up to the mistake. You know, saying I'm going to come back better. You know, and I think, you know, I think even that's probably why I asked him, like, are you still saying you're done with 185, or do you feel like you need to stay now? Kind of the same way Connor was like, oh, no, I'm not going to 155. Like, we're doing this again at 170. So I think there's still bright days ahead for Darren Till, and I think he handled himself with class. There were so many great moments on this card. I will say, first of all, I don't like to pat myself on the back too much, but I did try to tell everybody in Dallas, get ready to watch Irene Aldana and Lucy Pudilova. It's a fight that nobody cares about, but it's a phenomenal fight. Thank you, sir. The Frosty Beverages have been delivered at this point.
God damn, that was a good fight.
Some quick service, by the way.
Yeah,
the room
right?
service here is fantastic.
Just in general, I feel like, you know, the Ubers get here on time. I mean, sure, they drive like you're trying to get across the border, but, I mean, it gets us here on time.
And through that traffic that we can see outside the window right here, it is nuts.
Like, my dude was driving, like, on the side, like, not even on an actual part of a freeway, but, like, on the side of a freeway just to go around the traffic. And I'm
God bless.
I'm terrified, but it works.
God bless. All right, so Irene Aldana, Lucy Pudilova, that's one of the best women's fights I've ever seen.
Honestly, it was fantastic.
And I had a feeling that was going to be good.
The fact that Aldana broke her hand in the first round, and managed to power through it, and not only
back.
And won.
Unbelievable. So many shout-outs on this one, man. Jared Brooks, I thought that no way that was a split decision, but we got to hang out with him a couple of times earlier in the week, man. He's a good dude, and I was happy to see him pick a win. Jeff Neal, man. Jeff Neal, that knockout. Not only was that knockout of Frank Camacho brutal, but even before then, the head kick, you know, just the speed and the accuracy of his punches were phenomenal. But
levels to that game as well. And Jesus,
he
sent Camacho to the shadow realm. I mean,
that was nuts. Poor Camacho, man. I mean, Camacho, he ain't going anywhere, man. That dude scraps, man. That dude throws down every time. So it was a brutal way for him to lose.
Losses in, I think, what is it, two of his last three or three of his last four?
But he ain't going anywhere. He scraps. He scraps. And Tatiana Suarez, I've been telling people, if you're not on the Tatiana Suarez bandwagon, you better be on it now.
Or Latina Khabib. Can we call her that?
Did you see that she actually tweeted? She said, you can call me Tabib.
I missed that. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
I like that. So I'm signing on with that. Tabib. She's definitely at it. And, man, Carla Esparza, tough as they come to. Hey, saw our boy Nico Price at the airport on the way home the next day. He was bummed, you know. And that's one of those ones. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, man. I was so torn with that fight because I love both those guys.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Abdul Razak Al-Hassan is legit. And it was, you know, saw Nico and it just, you know, all he could do is give him a little fist bump and be like, bro, you know. You come to bang every time. That's all we can ask.
Well, it was almost a shame that it ended so early because I think, give it another. I mean, that could have been like the sort of Poirier Eddie Alvarez style fight. Or once again, it ended early. I would have liked to see a rematch. I mean, it's not going to happen because it was so definitive. But damn, it's just a shame we didn't get to see as much as we could have.
How was the unfiltered beer, by the way? We just basically we don't know any of the names on the menu.
Can't even pronounce them.
Can't even pronounce them, so we just picked one and had it delivered.
Something that said unfiltered at the end, so I guess we're being kind of healthy?
Stop with that. Unfiltered is healthy. All right. I like it. All right, well, listen, 228, like I said, apologize that we didn't come through with the and a half. I will be able to do something. I know not everybody's fired up for this card in Moscow, but I don't leave until Monday morning, so I will have some extra time to do that. All the flights left at like 5 a.m. to get back to the States on Sunday, and I'm like, that's not enough time to get my work done.
My flight leaves at 10 in the morning Sunday.
So you'll have time to finish.
Yeah.
That won't be a fun night for you, though. That's a no-sleep night.
Sleep on the plane.
All right, let's talk about UFC Fight Night 136. First thing is first, before we really dig into the card, it's the Russian debut. And I think that's, you know, and I'll be honest with you, that's why I'm here. You know, a lot of the staff even is said, like, man, we didn't think you'd be here for this one. Because, no secret, MMA Junkie has trimmed back on the travel budget a little bit this year, and we've missed some international cards. And on paper, this card, it does not look to be an absolute, you know, star-studded affair. But to me, I thought the push, and fortunately my bosses agreed, was to come cover the fact that it's the first event in Russia. I mean, this is a piece of history. I wanted to see, what's the Russian market like? What is, you know, what's their passion for MMA? How do they react? How do that sort of thing? And I think we've got a little bit of that. I got to imagine, I know you try to do, you know, a pretty good job of covering all the European events, but was it the history that kind of factored into getting you here as well?
It was kind of a no-brainer. I mean, it's such a big thing. I mean, Russia is... Well, I mean, Russia's the America of Europe, more or less. I mean, it's the Titan. I mean, you know, China is the Titan, or is the USA of Asia and so forth. So, I mean, it was really kind of a no-brainer. We've seen so much top-tier talent come out of there. And, they've, you know, I'd say most of their organizations are pretty well respected as well. I mean, M1 Global, Fight Night Global, Pro FC, all those. Logistically, it was pretty simple. It was like less than a 2-hour flight. It wasn't that expensive. Yeah, basically, it was just me and Stefan telling our boss, like, hey, we got you know, a couple of sizable names here. We got Blachowicz, we got Hunt, we got Orlovsky, and we got a ton of upcoming talent. This is going to be a big thing for, like, it's going to be a kind of a, well, it is a historic thing. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, for us, it was just a lot easier to get it going than it was for you on the other side of the pond, so.
It's a long haul.
Yeah.
It's a long haul.
So much less convincing on our part.
To get it done, no question.
Yeah.
So here's what we're hearing so far. So it's being held at Olympic Stadium, which is a very, very old venue, which is actually, per my understanding, going to be torn down later this year. So this is one of the final events that will be there. They've replacing it with some new stadiums. So there still will be arenas that can hold the UFC moving forward, but they're tearing this one down. It'll be one of the final events there.
More history.
Yeah, a little bit of history there, too. I have heard that ticket sales are going really, really well.
I've heard so, too.
Now, I think this building holds like 40,000 or something like that. They scaled it down, of course. You know, they didn't want to go that big, I guess, right away. But I've heard that, you know, over 20,000 seats already. And I hadn't thought about this, but, you know, some people are saying, listen, we're not sure we're there yet, but there's a real possibility. If you think about it, this could be one of the top 5 to top 7 most attended UFC events ever, because you've got the 4 stadium shows that hold the record, right? I mean, you've got Rogers Center, you've got Curitiba, you got Stockholm, and what am I missing on the? I don't know.
Was
Toronto, Curitiba, Stockholm? I'm gonna feel like an idiot. What's the other stadium show?
T-Mobile? No.
Why can I not remember right now? This is so sad.
It is, and it's none of us that can remember either. So,
and then outside of those, maybe there's only 3 stadium shows. Then outside of the stadium shows, the Bell Center in Montreal used to do huge venues with George St. Pierre.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it's an arena, that was a really big arena where they used to get like 22,000-23,000 in there. So there's a possibility that it's going to sneak up on some of those Bell Center shows. So could be a very big one. And you know, there are a lot of questions. I think most people that listen to this show are probably educated enough or hardcore enough to realize. I mean, we told everybody from the beginning, you know, when they announced Russia, we told everybody, listen, we're hearing Fight Pass. You know, they want to have it at a local time. It's not going to be Khabib. Don't get your hope ups. And people, I think, still were holding out reservations. But, you know, I think it does make sense. I mean, of course, if Khabib wasn't fighting Conor, it would have been amazing to have him on this card.
Oh, yeah.
But I think this is the right choice, man, to come in on the first try in a big market like this, as you said, you know, a titan of Europe in this nation, man, I don't think you want to come at them like they do in Japan. We're like, hey, we want you to show up at 9 a.m. on a Sunday, you know, or hey, let's do like the Manchester pay-per-view and we need you at, you know,
well, let's face it, historically, Russians don't like being told what to do, so I think that's also a good thing. I don't know that a lot of people were surprised that we didn't put Volkov on the card. I think a lot of people were expecting that, but I mean, I still think that the card we got is a lot of fun. I mean, not necessarily the most high stakes.
Right.
Co-main event definitely has quite a few stakes there. Main event could produce some interesting stories, but not necessarily your next title challenger. But I mean, it's probably as good as it's going to get, honestly. I do think that even if it's not, you know, the Khabibs or the Volkovs in terms of name and status, I think that entertainment-wise and talent-wise, I do think that this is going to be a really good card.
And you'll hear some. I'm going to play some audio later for some executives that we talked to, and they said, listen, one of the things we did find is that Russians do identify with other Russians. They want the local names. Now, that changes over time, I think. You know, I mean, because I think we've seen it happen in Brazil. I think we've seen it happen in Europe, where you're like, hey, yeah, we do want to support our local guys and see them in the UFC. But, hey, also, I don't want a Cage Warriors card on UFC. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, I want to see the stars of the UFC that I watch on TV and bring over here. So I think, you know, at first, it's probably right. Let's have as many Russians as we can. Let's make sure the crowd can cheer for the Russians and, you know, have our thing. But at some point, you got to start making the switch over. So before we dive super deep into this card, I did want to ask if you've had much chance to ask people around about Khabib Nurmagomedov, because this thing is interesting to me. So I had a chance to basically just been talking to like bartenders and things like that, you know, outside of just the MMA world, you know what I mean? Like, hey, and I will say, maybe it's silly, but even as much traveling as I've done, it is pretty cool to be here. As an American, especially American of my age, you know, I'm 40 years old, I do remember a time when this was like our enemy, you know what I mean? And so it's kind of funny to talk to people and be like, dude, what was your attitude about us growing up? You know, and like, what did you think about us growing up? And like, you know, it's been kind of fun. It's cool to be here. But so I've had a chance to talk to people, you know, kind of outside the MMA world, and I've been a little bit intrigued. The politics in Russia are definitely complicated.
Yeah, and with autonomous republics and all that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So with Khabib, everybody knows him, but it doesn't sound like everybody supports. It sounds like Conor McGregor has some support here. You know, there's people that are going to be cheering for Conor McGregor that see him as a superstar, whereas I just assumed everybody here was Khabib number one all day.
Well, no, I mean, just having some basic, perhaps more than basic knowledge, just and some general interest in sort of Russian history and stuff like that. Obviously, I mean, the bad blood between Russia and some of the autonomous republics is very harsh. I mean, there's been, let's not go under the table. If there's been a lot of you know, terrorist attacks and violence and you know, occupations and stuff like that back and forth, and it doesn't surprise me that much. I mean, really, if you think about it, it's you know, smaller states that or regions that don't necessarily culturally or religiously identify as much with what we consider Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely an interesting situation. We haven't actually had time to talk to a whole lot of people who speak English because it's not in an abundance here. I'm glad that I read up on, you know, a few.
Well, you guys
basic
are at
Russian
Airbnb,
words.
So like I've been in an area where there's basically service staff who are catering to, you know, English speakers in a lot of time. You're kind of...
The guy who worked at Domino's, he could say a few words, but I did not feel that it was a good opportunity to ask him about Khabib. So you probably have more insight there, but it doesn't surprise me in the least.
It's interesting. I thought for sure. I will say Fedor Emelianenko, universally loved. He is essentially a god here. He is the big nog of Russia or something.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? He's a guy. So I thought that was interesting. You know, again, it sounds like people certainly know Khabib, just not necessarily all are in 100% favor. So I found that interesting. By the way, the other stadium show, you're gonna feel stupid because I felt stupid. It's Melbourne. It's where
Rousey got. Of course. God, how could I forget that?
That's like the biggest one of all, man.
Yeah, it was only the biggest one of all. Oh,
Jesus. I know. I feel like an idiot. Well, I'll blame the frosty beverages, even though we just started partaking this evening. It's just the long-term effect of the frosty beverages. All right, let's talk about the main event here. Mark Hunt versus Alexei Oleinik. A clash of styles, right? I mean, this is old school as you get when it comes to MMA.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Hunt is coming out looking to knock your block off. Meanwhile, Alexei Oleinik, the master of the submissions, the master of the Ezekiel choke. Although, at the open workouts yesterday, I found it funny. You know, Dan Hardy was on point with the question. He said, listen, I got to ask, do you think you can choke out Mark Hunt? And Alexei Oleinik said, nah, I can't. Yeah. He's like, I can't. You know, there's just that neck is too big and fat. He's like, I can't do anything with it. So
I followed up with that question because we got a small little one-on-one with Oleinik. I'm like, okay, so you said that it's probably not going to work with Ezekiel. What do you think is going to work? And he's like, I got something special, but I'm not going to reveal it. I'm like, come on.
We want to hear the prediction.
Yeah.
Well, give me what you think on this because it is interesting. I mean, two guys that are in their 40s, so not two young bucks. Alexei scares me. It's amazing. You know, you talk to people that train with him and people that roll with him. They're like, dude, his squeeze, his strength is unbelievable. Mm. But it's funny, you know, you'll see him at the weigh-ins or at the workouts. I mean, the way he moves, it looks like his body's falling apart. You know what I mean? It just looks decrepit. It doesn't look athletic. You know what I mean? He moves awkwardly. He stands. His body just works at awkward angles.
Kind of like a 40-year-old man who was thrown into a cage fight.
Maybe so. Who's been fighting for 20... Can you imagine? He fought here. He fought in Moscow in 1997.
That's insane.
It is bizarre. I graduated high school in 1996. He was already fighting in Moscow. So, you know, his record's amazing. But how are you seeing this with Seb? Because to me... Alexei's as dangerous as it gets with those submissions. I mean, he gets you from angles you're not expecting. I mean, of course, everybody makes a lot of him getting an Ezekiel while being mounted, but you should. I mean, that's intriguing, you know? But yeah, Mark Hunt does look to have kind of a neck that's unattackable, so to speak.
Yeah.
How are you feeling on this one?
This is such a coin toss matchup for me. I mean, it really is, like you said, it's a clash of styles, and it is one of a few fights where it really is like specialist versus specialist. We barely see that anymore. Everyone is so well-rounded these days. And I don't know. I really have a hard time picking who has the advantage here because I feel like neither of them are particularly glamorous in their style. Mark Hunt, he fires off. I mean, he's obviously not a stranger to taking a few, to giving one. And Oleinik, I feel like he's kind of like, kind of weird and awkward in the way he scrambles and goes for stuff. And it's just, I don't know. I think that I will give a very, very, very slight edge to Mark Hunt. Mm. I think that's just level of experience and, well, not to say that Oleinik is inexperienced, but I mean,
at the highest level.
Yeah, at the highest level against the likes of, you know, your Verdums or Dos Santoses, Overeems and such. I do think that he does have the opportunity to catch him coming in. And I do think that, I mean, we've seen from him time and time again that he can take a beating for a couple rounds. If Oleinik doesn't submit him, I don't see him having the ground and pound needed to finish.
No.
And every fight starts standing up. So the way I see it, I think that either Hunt will get like a knockout in the first two-third round, or Oleinik will grind out a decision or possibly a late submission. But, I mean, again, it's really, really close.
Did you just lay out every possible scenario for a fight?
Probably, yeah, I did.
It's going to be one of these. I predict
one of these
it.
10 scenarios, so regardless, I'm right.
That's great. No, you know what? I'm leaning a little bit towards Mark Hunt as well. But, you know, it's funny. You mentioned Fabricio Verdum. I want to play this audio from earlier today. This is from the media day. I had a chance to jump up in a scrum. So you'll hear my voice mainly. You'll hear a couple other voices as well to speak with Mark Hunt. And he went off. And pretty much without me pushing the buttons or anything.
We were talking about unfiltered, huh?
Yeah, this is Mark Hunt unfiltered. Hide your kids, hide your wife if they don't want to hear a couple of F-bombs because he lets it go here. And he's got some other stuff to say that we'll talk about too, but he definitely has something to say about Fabricio Verdum. Here's Mark Hunt.
Mark, you have fought all over the world. It's crazy that you haven't fought here before. But, I mean, at this point, do you still get excited to, like, go somewhere new? I mean, does it keep it fresh for you?
Coming to Russia, I'm excited. You know, I'm happy to come in here. Despite the circumstances with my situation with the company, I'm still excited about coming. It's actually funny for me because I think Perth was the first time I didn't feel so... You know, excited about being a top-end prize fighter. But here, I'm excited about it. You know, coming to perform in front of all of Russia and fighting the Russian local, I think it's great for me because not only for me, but for the Russian people, especially because they get to see me perform not only that, but open a new market and see Alexei, you know, punch on. You know, we're both nearly the same age and... Well, I'm older than him, I think, you know, and he's a clean fighter, so, you know, it's great.
You touched on your situation with the company. Expand on how you feel right now. I mean, does it make fight week difficult for you or motivation difficult for you?
You know, I've got two fights left. It's very hard to be in a situation, but, you know, I'm trying to get an even playing field here with my life, you know, whether that be my last fight. My last fight, whatever it is, you know, if not the last fight in the octagon, you know, fighting to make it even will be probably my last fight. So whether I get known if it's for my great fighting or if I get known for making things even, either or, it doesn't matter for me. I mean, actually, that's more important for me, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, that is more important
legacy
to make it even.
Knowing you helped clean up the sport?
Well, of course. I mean, shucks. You know, I mean, you know, it's been a chain of them, you know, and you know, yeah, it's not a good feeling, but I'm honestly excited to be here, part of the Russian opening. I'm glad that Fabricio Verdum got caught, the little bitch. You know, go back to the favelas. Fuck you, you little cunt. Good job. You know, he was supposed to be here, but that's what you get for being weak. That's what you get for Fabricio being a weak-minded person. See you later.
I kind of wondered. I mean, is it weird that, you know, he gets popped and you get called? I mean, knowing how you feel about things, is it weird for you to feel it?
They pulled me. I got pulled from the Sydney card. He took my place. You know, that guy needed me in their head in Mexico. I had to lose 21 kilograms in 3.5 weeks to make their title fight. I got kneed in the head by that little cheater. And look, he wants that intimate. And then he beats Kane in Mexico. It really upsets me about that guy. And then he wouldn't fight me. He's just a cheating little bitch, man. He's a little dog, that guy. See you later, Fabrizio. Enjoy, motherfucker.
Why did you take fight in Russia against Russia?
Because I'm excited. The closest I've been here in Russia is Kazakhstan, you know. I came with the Australian team for amateur world Muay Thai. I always wanted to come to Russia. Replacing Fabrizio. See you later, mate. And especially headlining another event, opening for Russia, and fighting Alexei is good because Alexei called me out a long time ago. So, yeah, let's dance.
Mark, I gotta ask: did you practice an Ezekiel choke defense at all? Was that a part of camp? Did you get down and grapple and try to defend a choke?
No, that's called. That guy just said it was called the strangulation. He's going to get you the strangulation. And I said, so no, I didn't practice that at all. Of course not. I'm just going to let him choke me.
You know the game plan of Alexei. From where? And do you have some insider? What will he do?
No, I'm just going to let him choke the life out of me so I am fucking dead like this.
And Alexei told that he can't execute Ezekiel choke on your neck. Do you think he's truthful about it, or it's a way to trick you?
No, he can. He can do it. He can do it.
He can, because
he can. He can do that. He can just walk over and just Ezekiel choke me. I'll allow him to do that.
Mark, what is the plan moving forward? You mentioned having two fights left. I mean, do you think that's it, or do you think there's still more in you?
I can fight forever. You know, my body says I can't. I don't take anything to help me apart from supplements. It's hard to train with the younger guys. You know, I'm 44. I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing at my age, especially with these young guys. I mean, that's why I'm glad to be fighting with Alexei, because he's similar in age. And me and him have got a wealth of experience. And it's just on the night, who's the best fighter wins. So, you know, to be honest, I want to fight, finish my contract with UFC, and then fight three or four more times globally, and then hang up and retire. You know, I've earned my right to enjoy my life, and, I just want to finish on a better note, not being sour about, I never wanted to be in this fucking lawsuit, to be honest. So, you know, I think to be okay when I leave with fighting. You know, it sucks that I've, you know, have to talk about this stuff, you know. It annoys me.
Do you think you could stay? I mean, you said two fights in the UFC and then four abroad. I mean, do you think the UFC could come back and say, Mark, you're a star, we love you. Stick around, man, stick around.
I mean, honestly, if that was the case, then they would have sorted the steroid situation a long time. I don't know. If the offer's good, I'm not stupid. You know, I've got to pay bills too. I've got to pay the tax man. The tax man always fucking calling me the prick. I've got to pay bills too. But if the offer's good enough, then I'll do it. If not, then I'll go and do it on my own terms.
Nice.
At least I won't have an issue with anything. Yeah.
Last question for me. I mean, this is a big stage. It sounds like it's going to be a huge crowd. It's going to be an awesome event.
Yeah.
How do you see this fight going, man? Is this a war? Is this a battle? Or do you go out there and get the walk-off KO? How does this go?
I don't know, man. I'm prepared really well for this fight, so I'm looking forward to dancing with Alexei. And, you know, in my mind, I'm knocking him out first, second round. But I'm prepared for five rounds. I'm prepared for the long haul. Strangulation to the death, whatever. I'm ready for it.
All right, so that was a very fired up Mark Hunt. I mean, listen, nothing new with his position on the anti-doping, and of course, you can sense his anger there. We certainly appreciate the candor. Hopefully, I'm sure people will find that very, very entertaining, and hopefully you get a chance to see the screenshot that I used as a photo on the story that's actually going to be published in just a few minutes on MMA Junkie. But, okay, nothing new there, but I will say, first of all, it was interesting to hear Mark be the man that he is and say, hey, Olenek can come choke me into like death. I thought that was a little, I didn't know where he was going with that, but I wasn't comfortable with that. But you know, him talking about, listen, he's got two fights left with the UFC, and then after that, you know, four fights that he'd like to fight abroad, you know, outside the organization. But you know, if the UFC comes with the right money, he'll stick around for those last four fights. But you know, he doesn't feel confident that they will because of the lawsuit and all that. I don't know, just a lot of interesting points there. It's going to be interesting to see where the career of Mark Hunt goes, because man, he is such a star, right? He's just got that star quality about him. Even though he's got the basically 500 record, you know what I mean? People gravitate towards him. I mean, the one-punch knockout artist, and he's got such – when he does that, you know, when he's willing to just lay it all out there, it's hard not to.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, both personality and style-wise. I mean, it's like he's never – I mean, if he can help it, it's going to be a bomb-ass exciting fight. And personality-wise, I mean – he sat there talking to us just for age. I mean, I think he was the last one to leave or something like that. And just real chill, awesome guy. Definitely someone you want to invite to the barbecue.
That would be fun at a barbecue. The rest of his crew is too, man.
Oh, Ty Tuivasa, hide your shoes.
Tyson Pedro and Ty Tuivasa have been around having a good time as well this week. All right, let's talk about the co-main event. Jan Blachowicz versus the returning Nikita Krylov. Glad to see Nikita back. You know, I totally understood his reason for leaving. He was offered a lot of money, you know, and he said too that, you know, he wanted to fight locally in this region so that people here knew him more. He didn't think he was as well recognized as he should be, and he feels like, hey, I got put on TV around here. You know, I think people know me more. I banked a lot of money, but I always knew I was going to come back, and now I'm back. And walks right into a very, very important matchup. Jan Blachowicz, certainly a perennial contender in this division. To me, this is a lot of power versus speed. You know, I think Jan is as strong as they come in the division. But Nikita, both at the open workouts and then today at the media day, just talking to him, looks lean, looks sharp, says he's grown mentally as well. You know, he feels more mature as a fighter, as a person. Just give me your thoughts on this matchup, you know, talking to the guys this week and, you know, having Krylov back.
Well, I think that, like you said, Nikita Krylov, I always thought that the thing that was holding him back the most was sort of like mental or such. I feel like he always had the talent, but there was a lot of moments in his career in the UFC where I felt like you should, like, for example, he was fighting Asoa Pelele. He should have won that fight. That was a fight that he should and could have won. Just, you know, small little things where it's like, I probably wouldn't have done it that way or, you know, whatever.
Right.
I also think that this is good for him. He's had a chance to sort of build himself up, build his own name up. Mm-hmm. I mean, and honestly, he does deserve it. I mean, he was on a fantastic streak in the UFC. And it's a tough test. It's a really tough test. Krylov is a bit more perhaps awkward and a bit more fluid, a bit more diverse. Blachowicz, a real Polish powerhouse. Another really tough fight to pick, in my opinion. I think I have to give a slight edge to Blachowicz. But again, very slight.
Very close on the odds makers. I wanted to take a peek at it. I actually went with Krylov in my picks, but I agree with you. I mean, this is a tough challenge for him.
Yeah.
Krylov is a slight favorite at this point.
Oh,
so
really? That actually surprises me.
I think they opened it basically a pick 'em, and Krylov is a little bit of a favorite, but a big fight for him. And he said, "Listen, you know, I talked to him today. He's like, listen, I know I've been away." But, you know, I went 4-0 while I was gone. You know, I got a championship belt on the international stage. I believe this fight matters a lot. You know, he pointed to Corey Anderson and Ilir Latifi and also Anthony Smith and Volkan Ozdemir as kind of the two fights along with this one where the winners of those fights are really going to be able to position themselves strongly in the division. And it's hard not to argue with that. You know, if one of those – the winners of those three fights, you know, kind of comes out and has a fantastic performance, you know, they're all sitting around and hoping that John Jones doesn't get clear because obviously we know what's happening when he comes back.
Well, we actually asked Blachowicz because, you know, about the whole, you know, Cormier situation, like, hey, what if he doesn't come back? How do you feel? Should the UFC strip his title and such? And he said basically, like, well, they have to make a decision now. Either he comes back or we strip his title. And I'm like, okay, well, say that happens. Who fights for the title? And he was like, yeah, me after I win this fight and Gustafsson.
Gustafsson's got to be there as well.
Yeah, you can't deny Gustafsson at this point.
He's got to be there. It's interesting, man. They're still looking for that main event in Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard all the same things that everybody else is, that they've really been angling for John Jones and Alexander Gustafsson behind the scenes. But we still just don't have this clearance by USADA. And along the way, it's made me feel like they must know more than we do. They must know what's going on. But as we get closer and closer, I don't know, man. The people I talk to, everybody around John Jones is very positive. You know, they won't say, yeah, we're going to get cleared and we're going to fight this date. They just kind of say, yeah, man, things are moving well. But they've been saying that for months, you know, and We're getting close, man. We're getting really close. And my understanding was that was always kind of the working main event, knowing that there were challenges in the way, but challenges that were expected to be cleared. And as we're getting closer, man, I don't know. Hopefully, I will not be at that press conference next week in New York with Dana.
Okay.
But and Habib and Connor as well, I should say. But hopefully that does get brought up. I would hope a media member, because that's, I mean, I know they're there to promote Connor and Habib, but that's a pretty big show that's only a month later and doesn't have a main event yet. Hopefully somebody brings it up. I wouldn't be. I mean, the card already looks good for Madison Square Garden, but you got to go strong when you go to Madison Square Garden. You got to have at least one title fight on there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. I mean, it sounded like Tyron was down the other day, and it sounds like Colby's down. That wouldn't be a terrible main event to put on top of that. I think there's real bad blood there.
Yeah.
You got a motivated Tyron that I think is going to want to come out and promote the event and talk a little trash. And of course, Colby's going to be Colby. I don't think that would be bad if that winds up being the main event there.
No, definitely not. I just don't feel like it has that zing that Jones Gustafsson 2 would have.
Even though that would be a non-title fight, it would still be five rounds. It would still be a rematch of one of the greatest fights ever in the division.
Yeah.
It would be amazing.
I mean, to be fair, yeah, they should have a title fight. I mean, is that the best title fight alternative? Without a doubt.
Yeah.
That is the most concrete, yeah, we can get this title fight going type of bout. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm extremely biased here, but I would personally prefer to see Jones Gustafsson too. I mean,
nah, that's a fight that everybody wants to see. I think you would take that over most. Yeah, I mean, I guess over pretty much any available title fight right now. I mean,
right?
Shevchenko against somebody. I mean,
Shevchenko against Joanna flyweight title. That's a lot of fun, but it doesn't have those stakes.
I agree. And by the way, I guess that's weird. We should say, speaking of Joanna, she's here, so we'll actually talk to her tomorrow, which I'm anxious to do. But earlier today, her and Rose popped up on the UFC 230 website.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we were with some UFC officials, and we were like, hey, is there something you need to tell us? And
yeah.
He's like, no, it's wrong. We've already found out about it. They're trying to fix it, but that was kind of bizarre. So that literally just happened a little bit ago, so
yeah.
Maybe we can poke around, especially now that all the staff is starting to have a few frosty beverages as well. Maybe we can find out.
Ooh, yeah, I like it. Get some stuff out of them.
All right, Andre Arlovski versus Shamil Abdurakhimov in the third fight on the main card. All right, listen, I know this is weird, right? And Andre's been in a bad mood all week. There's no question about it.
Pound for pound, the fighter that scares me the most in person.
He is intimidating. I'm not going to lie. He is intimidating. Fortunately, you know, him and I have a pretty good relationship, and he loosened up, and we got a decent interview that's up on MMA Junkie. But I mean, we all saw the footage, right? He walked out on a Russian TV show. Now, again, we're talking about politics. We're talking about all these things that I don't necessarily understand. And I'll be honest, I was going to ask him about it today, but dude, I watched him do interview after interview, and he was not like he was in the worst mood ever.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? I'm kind of curious, but I don't think this is going to make or break our coverage at MMA Junkie. So let's just talk about some other things, the future, how he feels about the fight. Let's not talk about that Russian TV gig. But it is weird. And even before that, I had seen that whole walking out on the TV thing. When I was kind of starting to put my notes together for this card, I did think it was weird, right? Like, here's the Russian debut.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Andre is from Belarus, but putting him against an quote-unquote actual Russian, I don't know. It just seems weird to me. Like, Andre is a legend in the sport, right? I mean, he's a guy
yeah.
that's been doing it forever. He's a former champion. You would think that you would want him to come in and kind of get that rub. You know what I mean? Again, this is the first event. That first event, you want the crowd going nuts, man. You want him getting that build. You know, you're talking about, I mean, one of the best ever, of course, was the Dublin event where, you know, all the Dublin guys were building. The first Brazil event that was that way, where all the Brazilians were getting wins and the crowd was just building to this crescendo. And so I thought this bit of matchmaking was a little bit weird, not stylistically, not ranking-wise or anything like that, but just putting Arlovski against a Russian so that Arlovski doesn't get the love as the quote-unquote local guy. I mean,
yeah.
At the open workouts the other day, he even, like, grabbed the mic from Dan Hardy because, again, the guy was in a bad mood. There's no He was like, oh, you don't have any questions? He was being nice about it. He's like, oh, you don't have any questions for me? Like, well, of course Dan had questions for you. That was his entire job of being there, you know what I mean? He's like, oh, you don't have any questions for me? Like, okay, well, good. And the last thing he says is, my mom is Russian. That was the last thing he said, like, to the whole crowd. Like, by the way, my mom is Russian.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like some of this is getting to him. And I do wonder if it's kind of weird that they didn't I know it sounds maybe bizarre, but just put him up against an American guy. Put him up against a Brazilian guy. Like, you couldn't find somebody for him so that he kind of gets to be the hometown guy?
Yeah, that would have made a lot more sense. I mean, especially because, I mean, Belarus and Russia, you know, they are very similar, in, you know, ethnically and such. And I don't know if maybe they're trying to play up the fact that Abdurakhimov is, like, from Dagestan. And right. they're trying in that sense to give him. But correct me if I'm wrong, but we looked a couple days ago on the UFC site, and it said for a fight card, Andrei Arlovsky, country, Russia.
Right now it says Belarus, so okay. maybe it got changed.
Didn't we see it? Yeah, Stefan is confirming.
It said Russia.
It said Russia.
That's so weird.
And
again, this is politics that are on a level that we don't even, at least I don't even fully comprehend. Like, even Dagestan, you know, like, it's Chechnya. I mean, even though I will, and I've been reading about it. I saw a tweet like a week or so ago. I remember John Gooden said that he was like really diving into the history so that he understood it better, so he doesn't do anything erroneous on the call. So kudos to him. Much respect to him. Yeah. Fortunately, I don't have to do a broadcast, but I don't know. I thought it was weird matchmaking, man. I thought Andre, you should have put him against a quote unquote foreigner to let him get that love, you know?
I think so too. That would make it a lot more sense. I mean, unless they're banking on, you know, getting some fights going in the stands between the Dagestani fans and the Russian fans. I don't know.
That's what they're banking on? That's how you want to sell it? That's great. Alexei Kuchiko is taking on Thiago Alves, the undefeated Russian. Thiago, man. I asked him, I was like, dude, you're a veteran, but I don't know, man. Does it feel like some kind of Brazilian Rocky moment, you know what I mean? You're fighting in Moscow, but you're fighting against the undefeated local hero guy, and he's like, nah, I mean, you know, I see the guy, I see holes, you know, I looked at him, and he's good, but I'm not worried, but that's a tough matchup.
Oh, it's a tough test. I mean, for those who don't know about Alexei Kuchenko, I mean, he is a killer. He's been on my radar for a while, and, I mean, sure, a lot of the guys he's fought, I never heard of him before. But, I mean, when you see his fights and how he fights, this dude's intense. There's another fighter on the undercard that we might get to a little bit later on. But, I mean, just having 18-0 is no easy feat.
No, it's not.
It's going to be a tough test for both of them, to be honest. I mean, Kuchenko, he gets to test himself on the world's biggest stage against a former title challenger in the UFC who's fought with the likes of GSP and Carlos Condit and just, you know, but who is perhaps a little bit on his way down career-wise. For Alves, it's a test in terms of can he welcome somebody who, you know, in my opinion, it's kind of a losing fight for him because he beats him and it's like, oh, you beat a UFC debutant. If he loses, oh, he lost to a guy who, you know, never fought in the UFC before, who we've never heard of here on Fox, you know.
And if he loses, he's likely not getting out-wrestled for 15 minutes.
Exactly. I mean, if he loses, it's going to be another Curtis Melender. Another tough fight to pick. I'm probably leaning towards Kuchenko.
Yeah, I hate to odds makers minus 525.
Right?
Yeah. 5-1. So, tough challenge. Ouch. For Thiago. And Thiago, man, he seems to be in such a fantastic place mentally,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
He gave us probably the best interview all day.
He's so well-spoken at this point in his career and so just open and honest. And you know, he talks about the you know – and look, he's got a good head on his shoulders. He's like, listen, you know, if I – you know, kind of paraphrasing here because I don't even think he said if I did lose. I think he left that part out. But I think he's like, listen, whatever happens, you know – I go back to a wonderful life, you know. I've got a great family. I've done well for myself. You know, I'm happy, and I believe it. And I think that's good to be at peace and to have that kind of have a feeling. But yeah, man, it's a tough matchup for him, and could be a huge opportunity for Kuchenko. As you said, a lot of people that keep their eye on the scene have been high on him for quite a while.
Oh yeah,
and now he gets it on, you know, a pretty big stage. I mean, yes, it's a fight pass card, but it's a UFC. It's a debut in Russia. It's the main card. There's going to be, you know, 20,000 plus in attendance. It's going to be pretty impressive. So,
yeah.
All right. Listen, we talked a lot about the fact that this is the debut in UFC. I wanted to talk to my man Dave Shaw and kind of get his thoughts. He's, of course, vice president, senior vice president, I should say. I don't want to take that away from him. Mm-hmm. In charge of international and content. So he's basically out here handling all the international markets outside of the United States. And I just kind of wanted to get his take. You know, what does this mean? Where do we go from here? What was it? And, you know, let you guys hear from the executives that are on the ground making it happen. So, listen, we try to have fighter interviews all the time. But I thought, hey, this is – to me, this is almost more about the night itself, the moment itself, than even the fights. You know what I mean? This is about a landmark historical moment. So, here's Dave Shaw.
Let's just talk about this event overall. I mean, it seems like we've been working a long way towards getting to this moment. Now we're here. What does this mean to you and the company in terms of finally breaking into the Russian market?
It's huge. I mean, it feels a bit like a celebration. Our viewpoint right now is that the floodgates are going to open, and after this event, it's going to lead to a number of really important opportunities, not only for the brand and the sport of MMA, but, you know, I feel like there's just this undiscoverable group of athletes or athletes that have yet to be discovered that I think are going to play a major role in the growth of our sport. I mean, you think about the number of athletes that we have from the US and from Brazil. Number three is Russia and CIS. And so there's a lot of opportunity out there for us to identify new athletes that can be the next Khabib. And it's pretty exciting for us.
You touched on Khabib, so let's just start there. I mean, I'm sure you've been asked millions of times, why is Khabib Nurmagomedov not on this card? We know he's got a big fight with Conor McGregor coming up now, and that's not why. But was there ever a consideration to have Khabib fighting on this card?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, it was something that we considered. I think what prevailed ultimately in the end was the opportunity for us to do something in prime time. And you want to make a big statement, which is why we're going to Olympiski. You want to make an impact on the market, not only in the short term, but something that's going to be long lasting. And so for us, really, the decision was, could we come here and do something really meaningful in prime time? And obviously, that would preclude us from doing a pay-per-view. So it's not without, you know, outside of the realm of possibility for some point down the line. But really, for us right now, we wanted to do something that, you know, really made a statement.
So if he continues on as champion, because, I mean, certainly he's got a huge challenge in front of him right now, but if he continues as champion, I mean, is there the possibility that he could even defend his belt? I mean, could there be maybe a pay-per-view? I guess it'd be kind of middle-of-the-night type stuff?
Always the possibility. And, yeah, I mean, you look back through some of the events that we've done in the middle of the night, whether it's Stockholm or even Manchester 2 years ago now, that precedent's been set. We know we can do it. We know that fans will buy tickets and show up for a first bout that could be at 2 in the morning. So definitely a consideration for us moving forward, especially because, you know, fans everywhere, when we're talking to people, everyone knows him. Everyone wants to see him live. Everyone wants to see him in kind of the home region, let's say. So for us, it's definitely something that's on the top of the priority list.
Last thing I want to ask on Khabib. You know, you guys can't pick the outcome of fights. You know, things play out the way they do. But him beating Conor, I mean, would that serve a huge purpose in growing? I mean, how important is him continuing on as champion to growing this Russian market?
Well, I think he's a bit of a Trojan horse. I mean, I think he can be the type of guy that, you know, small, up-and-coming, aspirational mixed martial artists can revere and aspire to be like. And so, you know, him setting the example for many athletes to come, you know, by seeing what he's done over his career, you can identify that there's a pathway to excellence to become this global superstar. And so I think if he continues down that path, it's going to mean a lot for, you know, not only MMA, aspiring MMA athletes and fans in this region, in Russia, in the CIS, but also, you know, many different countries around the world.
You talked about the number of athletes that there are from Russia and CIS already. How many can come on? I wonder, you know, because we always talk about marketability and, you know, language barriers and, you know, cultural barriers and things like that. So what do you see as the future of ingesting fighters, you know, onto the roster? Is there a limit of how many Russian fighters can aspire to be in the UFC?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I think, you know, you look at the profile of our fans, first of all, and our fans are intelligent, they're discerning, and they demand high quality performance. And so by tapping in and really starting to discover some of these new Russian athletes, all we're doing is we're elevating the quality. I think the second point is that, you know, marketability really is a geographical thing. I mean, you know, if we're able to create local stars that can help us build the business here in Russia, we're building the brand, we're building the sport, and we're continuing the strategy of trying to make UFC a truly global enterprise.
Very nice. Let's talk about kind of the rest of the market. I mean, you're in charge of things outside of Russia. We know we've got this new ESPN deal. There's, I mean, it seems like a big kind of wind change right now for everything. What does that do in terms of impact on the international market? I mean, we know that's really just a U.S. TV deal that we're talking about, but what does that do in terms of number of events, focus on international? How does that impact the business?
Well, it's going to impact the business in a few ways. I think the way that the ESPN deal was negotiated really gave a number of opportunities for us to build the business internationally. So first of all, you know, ESPN deal is done. It allows us to shift priorities and really focus on the international business, and that's an exciting time for us. Number two is, you know, as we've talked about in the past, is we're going to have a number of events now that we contractually can show in quote-unquote off-prime time, right? So it allows us to bring an event to a market in prime time in that region, which is obviously a much more kind of desirable time to see an event. So, you know, I think it's going to lead to a few different opportunities. Typically, you know, I looking at Europe, looking at Asia, because those are the times that are tricky. I mean, Australia always works because it's so far ahead. Brazil and South America, those time zones are much more comparable. So it's important for us to be able to bring, you know, these prime time events into the region. And then I think the last point is, you know, we, given the platform that we've got with ESPN, is we've got this ability to promote our athletes in a much more meaningful way in the U.S., which obviously leads to opportunities when they're back in their home regions.
Where do you see Russia fitting into the global? Because, I mean, that's the only bad thing, right? When you expand into a market, you got to pull from somewhere else, I guess. I mean, how many annual events do you think Russia could host?
Well, so generally, we're increasing our output. So in 2018, we've had, or we will have 39 events. We're going up to 42. That's going to allow us to take a few more extra events to Europe, to Asia. You know, Australia's been on fire lately. We'll continue to have three events in Canada, three events in Brazil. And so for us, you know, I think with you know, the increased output, it's going to enable us to bring probably two events per year in Russia. It's something where, you know, we're not going to go too quickly. We want to make sure we're doing things properly. Truth be told, we don't know how many events per year the region can support. So I think, you know, we start with one or two and see where that goes.
What do you see? It sounds like so pretty consistent output, maybe even increased internationally. Are there new markets on hand? I mean, we always get excited about the potential to go to new cities and new countries. We're always excited for the USC for the first time. I know you can't necessarily lay out the full schedule for us, but I mean, are there any new destinations on the horizon for next year we might be able to expect?
There definitely will be. You know, we've had success this year in South America. The event in Chile was great. All indications are that the Buenos Aires event is going to be successful as well. Last year was the first time we were in China. We'll continue to pursue live events in China. We're not really sure which cities yet. When it comes to Europe, Middle East, and Africa, we will probably continue to service some of the key markets like the UK. Want to get back to Scandinavia. So there's a few things that we've got in the hopper that I think will be pretty important to fans everywhere.
It's a great way of answering and not saying any at all.
You know how it works around here. We don't want to lose any of our leverage. We're starting to sit down with venues to talk about it. But we've identified some you know, high priority places that we want to go. You know, when we talked about regulation in the past, we're hopeful that we can get legislation passed in France to make sure we can get to France for the first time. I think that would be a huge opportunity for us. And then, you know, continuing across Canada and Brazil. I mean, those are regions that we want to continue to build.
How close are we on France? I mean, we've been talking about it for years, but does it seem like real progress is being made?
Real progress is definitely being made. Unfortunately, it's one of those things where you just don't have a timeline. We are hopeful that at some point in 2019, that's pretty much the extent of it right now. I mean, we're doing all that's in our power. Sometimes it just comes down to, you know, who's in power, whether or not it's a priority for that ministry. And right now we're putting ourselves in a good position to succeed.
Cool. Last question for me on Russia. What constitutes success? I mean, we're going into this event. From all indications I've heard, it sounds like ticket sales are phenomenal. You know, the card looks like it could be a lot of fun. But, you know, is this an investment? I just wonder, what constitutes success? I mean, does it have to be a financial success at the gate? Is it that it needs to be a great show, you know, that people walk away from being amazing? Or does finances matter? Is this an investment in the future? I mean, help me understand how you say, yes, we did it. We succeeded.
So I think a few things. you know, first of all, this is an investment that we're making coming here, but it's one that we are certain is going to pay off in the long run. When it comes to specific metrics, I mean, this event is going to be, you know, at least in the top seven largest events we've ever done. You know, we've done those four stadium shows, had a couple big events at the Bell Center in Montreal. This could be top five, I mean, the way ticket sales are going. Obviously, viewership, I mean, we're at a really interesting time with our business here in Russia. We've got arguably, you know, two of the biggest events we've ever had coming, you know, to Russia for Russian audience in a span of 4 or 5 weeks, when you think about the Moscow event this weekend, plus the Conor Khabib fight in 4 weeks' time. So the viewership and, you know, the number of fans that we're connecting with through our various distribution platforms is going to be another one. And then I think lastly, you know, it's always really important for us to consider and to, you know, kind of take into the formulation, what does it mean from a brand perspective and how are fans reacting? And, you know, you're at the open workout yesterday. We're anticipating a huge crowd. Our sponsorship is way up for this event and for the next few months. And so for us, those are all good leading indicators on what a successful roadmap would be for 2019. And I think that's how we're gonna evaluate it.
All right, so there you go, Dave Shaw talking about the future of the UFC internationally, but especially in Russia. As he said, you know, probably, you know, two events a year here will be good, but with the expanded schedule, they're actually adding a few more next year. Won't have to take it away from anywhere else. And of course, Dave Shaw did a fantastic job of poker-facing me and giving me the perfect corporate answer when I tried to ask what new markets we were going to next year. It's funny, he actually texted me later, and he's like, bro, sorry I didn't have an answer for you, man. He's like, we're still finalizing everything. I was like, I'm just busting your balls. I know you can't. I know you'll never tell me anything.
Even if it was finalized.
You'll never tip your cards. You're too good at this, Dave Shaw.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the prelims.
Ooh, yes.
CB Dolloway is the feature fight there. Of course, his third different opponent in this. Man, they have not been doing CB Dolloway any favors. I mean, CB Dolloway seems to have some bad luck. Like, there just seems to be a black cloud over him anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I thought he had a tough assignment going in, and it seems to just continue to get tougher as things change and it gets different. And
he went from facing a middleweight champion to a light heavyweight champion. It's like,
so bizarre.
Like, whose wife did he hit on, or like, what's the deal here?
I feel bad for CBB. I saw him a couple weeks back up in Sioux Falls, actually. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a chance to speak with him. He's actually speaking at a charity event, and I didn't want to bother him because he was there to help like fundraise for this charity, and it was the charity that he actually when he went over to Africa and did some things there. Like, really, man, it was cool to hear him talk about it. Like, changed him inside. Like, it's given him like I don't want to say a purpose, you know, he's got his own life going on, but he's like, dude, I want to keep doing this, man. I want to keep going and helping out over there. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, tough assignment when you keep getting you've already got to travel to Russia. You've already got to be the out of town guy. And now you keep training for different opponent after different opponent after different opponent.
Well, not only that, but Khalid, let me try to pronounce this correctly. Khalid Murtazaliev.
That's better than I would have done.
Say that five times fast. I mean, a guy that chances are most of the people watching this haven't heard of before, but he's a light heavyweight champion in M1 Global, and he's a solid fighter. Out of 13 wins, 12 are by knockout or TKO. He hasn't necessarily fought any, like, yeah, not really any known names as such. I mean, some names that I recognize, right, like Edilson Franca, for example. But
well, that's the hard part about the guys coming out of this region. I feel like it's always such a tough evaluation because you can watch them on tape and you can like what you're seeing, but I feel like it's so hard to judge because they're fighting a bunch of people that commodities.
For all we know, he knocked out two future Khabibs.
Right.
It's just that we don't know of ever future Khabibs.
Yep.
So, yeah, tough test, definitely. Think Dolloway might have a hard time in this fight.
It's gonna be a tough assignment for him.
Yeah.
Man. It's a tough spot for him. Peter Yan versus Jin Soon Sun.
Sorry, son.
you were waiting all night for that one.
Oh, yeah.
Peter's minus 900. Wow.
Gee, is that the biggest favorite on the card?
Yeah, that's the biggest favorite on the card.
Okay. Well, that doesn't surprise me.
There are a lot of big favorites on this card.
Taisimov, too.
This is kind of the opposite of, like, Dallas, where, like, everything was close. I kept telling everybody, I was like, Dallas, like, these are going to be fun fights, man. I don't know how it's going to go, but these are going to be fun fights. But, yeah, a lot of one-sided ones here. But you had a nice scoop with Peter today. And, and as you say, man, I mean, a lot of people – are really high on this kid and say, listen, man, this guy's the future. I know he had an opponent drop out here. I think he's – I don't want to say he's accused people of ducking him, but he is
– what?
He's openly suggested that people might not necessarily, you know, enjoy the opportunity to fight him.
He's implied it. It's been very heavily implied. And first of all, he's ethnically is like Russian Chinese. Mm-hmm. God damn, is that not a starve of a UFC wanna market? There you've got your future of the market where you haven't really found your star, you know?
Boy, if he just had like a Indian grandmother or something like that, he'd have like most of the world covered.
How about he gets together with a female Indian fighter who becomes the next star? You put them both, main and co-main event, there you got it. You conquer all of Asia.
Conquer the entire world right there.
This should be a whitewash. Not a whitewash. Well, what's it called? One wash?
What's a whitewash?
Do you say that? Okay, it's not just for Hollywood whitewashing.
It doesn't sound like it's not racist. Okay,
Hashtag
no
racist.
All the ethnic talk. It's a whitewash.
Well, I mean, this should,
I mean, anything can happen in the sport. That's what we love about it. You know, as I always say when I look at big favorites. I mean, this is the sport where Matt Serra, who is here by the way, where Matt Serra knocked out George St. Pierre. You know what I mean? That's fun. You know, you can have fights where nobody gives anybody a chance, and things still happen. But people are
favorite. Don't bet your house on Su Son.
Damn, son. Rustam Khabilov versus Cajun Johnson. It's tough because I've been doing some extra stuff this week outside of fight week. Again, because this is more about the event, I've been trying to shoot some things outside that are more about the area, more about what's going on versus the fights. Because Cajun is a guy that I've been, you know, like Leslie Smith, trying to make sure I talk to on fight week because I get a chance to see him. And I wanted to talk to Cajun this week. I didn't. I saw you guys did. So I kind of want to get your take on it because, I've talked to USC executives, right? I've talked to USC executives, and they swear, like, what are you talking about? Like, We're not trying to get this guy beat. You know what I mean? We're just, we're just giving this guy fights.
We're just giving him really tough Dagestani matchups.
I was told, I don't even know if I should get into that, but
I can tell you what Cajun said about it.
Yeah, well, that's what I want to know. That's
he first of all, like, I was unsure if I was going to touch on it because we were like standing right in front of like the UFC PR people. And I was like, I don't know, maybe like be
yeah.
a little.
That's why I'll be honest. I mean, if you've seen some interviews I've done them outside of the media day because I feel exactly that way. Like some PR guy is going to come in and be like, Cajun has another appointment at this point.
Well, here's the thing. They actually asked us to wrap it up. They said that it was because
really?
They were closing the thing down.
That's what I always kind of assumed would happen.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, he brought it up. I didn't even touch on it. But he has very long answers. There's definitely a lot of quotes to get out of it. And he sort of started like going on and talking about how I don't even remember if it was relevant to a question I asked, if I'm completely honest. But he started talking about how, he's been critical of the UFC and he's aware of that. And he thinks that if he does lose this fight, he's definitely going to get cut. And that he's seen like what happens to fighters who are critical of the UFC and stuff like that. And so, I mean, he definitely touched on it. I did ask a follow-up question about like, okay, well, does this affect the way, you know, the way you speak about stuff? And again, I didn't even really want to like directly touch the criticism part just because the UFC PR people were sitting right over there. Sure enough, the moment he answered that question, he came over and talked to Stefan behind the camera and said like, hey, we have to wrap stuff up and please don't conduct interviews without talking to us first and blah, blah, blah. Thing is, he was not scheduled for the media day. I ran into him just on my way to see you in the other room.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I just ran into him. I'm like,
so you guys were just out in the hallways?
Yeah, we just chatted for a while. I'm like, hey, you know, if you got time, we'd love to talk
to you. I thought
you
guys had set something up. You just saw him or like, let's do this.
So and the thing is, like, if I were to have gone to talk to the UFC PR people and say, like, hey, can we get Cajun Johnson? 19 out of 10.
He's busy.
Yeah, but like, oh, he's not under on a schedule. Sorry.
Yeah, and I mean that's no disrespect to them. Like, not trying to attack them, but why? You know, if you're a PR person and you know what he's gonna say, why would you put him out there? You know what I mean? Like, they can't stop you from talking to him. But they don't have to help facilitate you talking to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
But then you don't also have to say, like, run it by us when we're definitely not going to get it for you.
That's true. Like, hey, well, you know what I mean?
Whatever. Like, again, we're not trying to throw them under a bus or anything. Point being.
No, they help us out a lot. The PR people are great. They help us out a lot.
Oh, yeah. Renee's been wonderful all week and stuff like that. But, yeah, he brought it up. I mean, it was obviously on his mind.
Yeah.
He was extremely articulate and well-spoken about it. And, I mean, it was probably one of my favorite interviews today, either him or Alves.
I like talking to Cajun Johnson about the labor stuff, man. I really do, because I do feel like it's not coming from a place of anger. It's not coming from a place of talking shit, basically. It's more like, dude, I just think this is the way the labor relations should work. And I think there's that, you know, there's definite truth to that. So, yeah, he's in his tough. Hobby Loft is legit. It's a tough and it's a
well,
tough
the funny
matchup.
Thing, he was like, well, yeah, Khabibov is a master at winning decisions. And it's like, admittedly, I feel like Khabibov's star has faded because he's on a five-fight winning streak.
Yep.
And he feels less hot now than he did after his UFC debut.
I agree.
And I think there's a lot of truth to what Johnson is saying here, in that Khabibov perhaps has toned down a little bit. Maybe those two losses in a row he had did affect him more than we thought.
Right.
I mean, he's still an intense fighter, but, I mean, let's face it. I mean, he hasn't put on a whole lot of memorable... I mean, what was the most memorable fight you remember him in? I mean, it was...
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you know, grinding...
Henderson, obviously.
I mean,
but
grinding out fights is... Yeah, it's... It doesn't necessarily earn you fans. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, you talk about, like, a Khabib Nurmagomedov where grappling and wrestling is definitely his strength. But, man, you got to be, like, constantly attacking. You got to be constantly transitioning. You got to be talking shit to the guys while you're doing it to them. You know what I mean? You must give up. I must fight for title.
It's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Tough assignment for Cajun Johnson. It's going to be interesting to see how this happens.
Hopefully he doesn't get cut eventually if something does not go his way. Because I would like to see him continue fighting in the UFC. I think he's an entertaining fighter. I think he's a lot of fun. But yeah, it'll be tough. Real tough.
I just don't think the matchmaking is by coincidence.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, let's face it, you got a list of Dagestani killers nobody wants to fight.
You're like, oh, you got hurt? Nah, we'll put it back together. Don't worry, man.
Yeah.
we'll still do it. Speaking of tough guys, Mirbek Taisimov versus Desmond Green.
Ooh.
I am a huge fan of Mirbek Taisimov and have been for a long time. Again, I think maybe some fans in the United States might not necessarily know the name simply because he doesn't have a visa. He struggled to get a visa. I have talked to people that are around him and that have helped him, and they say they really don't understand. You know, he does have Chechen heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I actually talked to him today about it. He said, listen, I'm not a criminal. He's like, anytime I've had a temporary visa to come to the United States, he's like, I've never overstayed it. I've never done anything I'm not supposed to do. And I don't know why I can't get this. Now, I don't know if that just has...
I wonder if it's like guilt by association kind of thing. But like, maybe there's somebody in his entourage or team or something that's done something. Because it makes no sense to me. I mean, every time I've spoke to him, he's been the most polite. I mean...
Oh, he is.
Polite,
super nice,
friendly,
man.
Welcoming. You know, hello, brother. It's just so nice and cool. Like, I can't see him doing anything bad. Well, outside of a cage, I guess.
Right.
But because in the cage, I definitely
would not call
him friendly and welcoming. But it makes no sense. I mean, he is a top-tier athlete. Honestly, he would be in the top 15 today. Hands, probably top 10 if he could just get a fight.
He has to get consistent results. That's the only thing holding him back is just not fighting.
And nobody wants to fight him.
Hell no.
Who? I can't even remember Felipe Silva. I don't remember who that fighter is. I'm sorry. Like... Revoke my journalism pass if you want to, but, like, honestly, how many people listening to this can remember Felipe Silva who fought him a Rotterdam card? It makes no sense.
Desmond Green that he's fighting. Desmond was involved in an automobile accident. I thought this fight was going to be scrapped. Again, I'm kind of regretful that we didn't do an interview with Desmond ahead of time. We usually do additional interviews. We didn't do additional interviews this week, and there's a couple reasons. Again, it kind of goes back to our staffing. I have to admit it. I mean, we're running a little tight right now on the staffing, and that's part of it. The other thing, too, is you know, listen, we're in the middle of transitions right now, and we're just being honest, man. We're always honest on the show. Like, we're in the middle right now of kind of reshaping the way we do some strategies at MMA Junkie. I kind of regret that we didn't get to talk to Desmond. Now, I don't know how open he would have been to talking about everything, especially on fight week. I could very easily see him saying,
"People died." It's
So it's weird because now if he wins, we're talking about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we have to. Like, bro, like, you got through it. Now let's talk about where your head's at. You know what this was like for you. What happened? But when it first happened, I thought this fight was going to be off. I mean, you know, they're going to let you leave the country with, I'm assuming, some type of investigation going on. But maybe the fact that he's here means that police don't think there was as much wrongdoing. And I shouldn't even say wrongdoing because we don't know it. We just don't even know the details, man. Yeah. I mean, a tire could have blown out. He could have been avoiding it. Who knows? We don't know everything that happened in that case yet. But it does have to mess with your mind to be – and thank God, man, I've been involved in a couple – it's been years since I've been involved in a vehicle accident. But when I was, they were incredibly minor, you know, fender bender type stuff. I can't imagine dealing with that and kind of what it must do to you.
I mean, the Indiana Jones ride at Disney World scares me enough. Not only, like, being in it, but having, like, say it was completely out of his doing. A tire blew out, flew, and hit the car behind him.
Right.
Nobody can help that. But it's, like, it's still got to, in some way, affect you.
It's got to weigh on you a little bit, right?
I really hope, and I judge from the fact that he's here, makes me think that he doesn't have any form of direct involvement.
That's what I think, too. Like, the authorities must, and again, I mean, it's almost irresponsible of us to speculate, but that's what I'm doing. I'm speculating. If I see a guy, I mean, as a journalist, sometimes you have to use, you know, educated guesses, right? Now you have to prove it, you know what I mean? But just my gut tells me if they were willing to let the guy travel out of the country, they must not think there's too much of a concern.
In my book, 2 + 2 = 4. So, I mean, it's like if he's here in Russia, where it's real easy for people to disappear, Snowden. I don't think he had a whole lot of direct involvement, but I mean, just still, I mean, A, the trauma of your own accident, B, the trauma of just like, oh shit, the thing I was involved in got, how many people was it killed? Two people killed. I mean, that would be rough. That'd be really rough.
It's weird, man. I kind of want him to win. I'll be backstage on Saturday. I'll definitely sneak out for the first fight of the night just so I can soak it in, and hopefully I can make it out for the main event to see what it ends up feeling like. But I'll be backstage interviewing the winners, and part of me wants him to win just so we can have that, you know, the chance to talk to him.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, Mirbek is I am a huge Mirbek Taisimov fan, as you said. I think this guy would be way higher up the rankings had he just been able to fight consistently. So. Big one. Yeah. All right, listen, one other interview I wanted to bring to you, another executive, and I think probably one of his first English language interviews, or definitely at least with the Western media, but Andre Gromkowski is taking over as the, well, not even taking over, it's a new position. He's the vice president of UFC Russia. So he is working behind the scenes to help make things happen. He's the one that's leading the charge here, as Dave Shaw kind of handles the entire globe, but he travels from place to place and checks in with these people. Andre is the guy that's on the ground here. He's the one that's going to continue. I mean, obviously, this is not a one-off event, man. This is the establishment of a market. You know, you said it perfect. You know, like, you know, the U.S. of here. You know, it's, you know, you look at like Brazil is the big market in South America. You know, I mean, this is a huge market in this part of the world, and this is not supposed to be a one-off event. So Andre is tasked with kind of building a team here and building a presence here and continuing to develop everything. So wanted to get his take on, you know, kind of starting this new gig and what he sees for the future of the Russian market as well.
Well, Andre, of course, you know that this has long been a target of the UFC to get to Russia. What kind of changed, I guess, or what triggered for this to finally become a reality?
Sure. Look, I think the main trigger probably is the partnership that was announced and built here. I think that was one of the reasons, especially, you know, having a strong local partner and then international investors on board is key to working in Russia, and I think many companies have learned this over the years, and I think the fact that UFC is launching with such strong partners is an important step forward.
Fantastic. You're going to be a new face to a lot of people, of course. So give us an idea kind of what role you're going to be playing, how much fans will get to see you out and about. Are you going to be behind the scenes, or what are you going to be doing?
Look, I mean, I'm, you know, my role is making the business run, building that business from scratch. I've done that multiple times over my career in media. I'm not from the MMA industry, but I do have a lot of love for MMA. So I think, you know, as time goes by, I think, you know, you have to look at the actual results of things being done, and that is important rather than just, you know, kind of being all over the place. So I think it's for me professionally, this is a great new step and a way to prove that we can get this great, you know, brand in a company to be in Russia and really to build and evolve here.
Very cool. Talk about the strategy of the card. I mean, this has long been a target to come to Russia, and I think people thought maybe, hey, it'll be a big pay-per-view event. You know, instead it's a little bit smaller event on Fight Pass. Can you tell me what the strategy was and why ultimately that was the decision that was made to come with this card?
Well, I think, look, I think first of all, it's important. Russia is, as they call it, a world on its own. Inside, like, so there, you know, we're doing research, for example, at the moment, and we're seeing that there's just so much love for local names, and there are many, as you know, great fighters here. So I think one of the goals of, you know, of developing this event was to have a lot of local names that would resonate with the people and with our fans. And I think the second part is obviously, you know, I think there were some initially, if someone had any misconceptions about who was going to fight, you know, for obviously for people who are, I think, you know, well into MMA, they obviously understand that there's time zone differences and that there, you know, some, you know, a big fight would a big huge event is something that you know, works for some time zones. And the event that I think we're going to have is for Russia is huge, because I think it's historic, it has local fighters, and it's just it's great.
I think longtime MMA fans, hardcore MMA fans, were very surprised when M1 Global was announced as a partner. I'm just curious kind of how that came about and what role they're going to be playing moving forward with the UFC, because obviously there was a time where those two brands were like oil and water.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're not we you know, there's talk obviously of this partnership, and I mean, we are cooperating, and I mean, it's great to have an extra you know, like someone who can help in terms of like local people from the local MMA scene. That's important. But I mean, we're obviously working with a number of local organizations, federations, and in building this. So I think that's just, you know, that's just part of our market strategy, and we hope that, you know, this will continue, and it will help us expand the UFC brand in Russia.
You're obviously entrenched in this market. I mean, we're just here for a couple days and observing the best we can, but give me your idea of the interest that this has generated. I mean, I don't know if there's any kind of, you know, tools that you've used to monitor or to regulate, but I mean, how would you gauge the interest in this event?
Look, I think it's very simple. When we launched, I think it was pre-sales of tickets to this event, you know, we had such a surge we did not expect. And to this day, you know, it's still unbelievable, because, you know, people we work with from the events industry, event who do a lot of different events, different types of events, they're saying, like, can we do this every week? This is amazing. And it's a first historic event, obviously. So obviously, there's a certain surge in popularity that comes with that. But I think it's just that the interest is huge. And, you know, we're obviously doing research. We're monitoring social networks. We're working a lot with our fans online, and we see that there's just, you know, probably from my estimation is, you know, about 53 million people in Russia, and men, I mean, watch this usually on average per year. And then if you get into, you know, details of separate events, well, I don't know, it's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 million, it's huge. So it's good.
Very nice. You mentioned that Russia is kind of its own separate world. Give us an idea, you know, are there challenges that are going to make this market tough as you move forward, you know, being a U.S.-based company or just in general? Because this is my first time in Russia. I don't know a whole lot about it. But, I mean, are there specific challenges to this market that are going to be, you know, hurdles to overcome as you try to grow this brand?
Well, you know, every market has its peculiarities. Every country is a bit different. There are cultural differences. But exactly for that reason, I think, first of all, you know, the UFC hired myself. We're hiring a team. We have actually a number of local team members already with both experience in MMA and different completely different areas, marketing, you know, digital, etc. So we're building our presence, and we have the team that is ready to help our colleagues who come from all over the world, really, right? From Australia, New Zealand to US to Brazil to many other places to make this work. And I think the fact that the UFC is such a great international organization by its nature helps that, because we solve problems. If there are any problems, you know, if any questions, we can always solve them. We team together and look at how to work with them. So I don't think there's anything really separately special, but it is probably one of the big places in the world where there's so many fans and fighters, which is great.
Yeah, one of them is fighting against Conor McGregor in a couple of weeks. Habib Nurmagomedov, of course, is becoming the face of Russian MMA. You know, obviously you can't pick outcomes of fights, but I mean, I wonder, is there any part of you inside that's got your fingers crossed and hoping to win? I mean, would that be beneficial for this market?
I mean, look, the success of Russian fighters is obviously important for this market, but I mean, it's, you know, you can't, you know, we don't make those predictions. But I think that it's generally is great when Russians win, because especially inside because it creates that pathway, that mental pathway for people, like a dream, right? And so we always look at the ability to create that pathway for many young people who would go into MMA and become fighters. I think that's very important, and I think that's something we will work with in the future to help a lot of these people who a lot of our fans and fighters, especially who can grow, you know, to become bigger and better.
Can you help us understand, as Americans, which most of our audience is, how big of a star Habib Nurmagomedov is in Russia? I mean, is he on par with footballers or hockey players? Or, I mean, where does he rank in terms of the national landscape?
Yeah, I think Habib is a huge star. I mean, it's amazing. Sometimes you go to speak to people who might not be familiar generally with MMA. But then when you say Habib, it's kind of like it really helps. But I mean, Conor probably as well. So it's superstardom. It's great.
No doubt. Can't mention Russian MMA without mentioning Fedor Emelianenko. Of course, he's fighting another organization now. But I wonder, is there any part of you that thinks that maybe there's still a hope that he could come to the UFC one day? I imagine his superstardom here is huge as well. I'm sure it would assist the Russian market. Is that something that you even consider?
It's interesting because, well, obviously we can't, you know, we don't the decisions in terms of who fights and who works, you know, in the UFC, those are made by our colleagues, by our team in Vegas. But in regards to Fedor Emelianenko, I mean, he's the head of the Russian MMA Union, which is a local federation. So obviously, you know, the main organization dedicated to mixed martial arts, you know, being working with them is important for us. So We do hope that we, you know, and some of their officials probably will work at our event, and you know, so there's obviously room to get things done and in this market at least.
Very nice. Well, step number one is Saturday night. I know we're all excited to see it, but give us an idea, your vision. What do you see for the future? I mean, how big can this sport be in Russia? How big can the UFC brand be in Russia? How many events do you see happening? Just give us an idea what the future of the UFC in Russia is.
When we talk to people in the media industry here, oftentimes they say, well, your sport is number two. And I say, number two compared to what? And they say, football, well, soccer in U.S. terms, right? So it's just basically, I think, it has the potential to be the second biggest sport here, at least. Potentially, might be the case in future years that it could be a number one sport. So for us, I think the important, what's important is that we develop in terms of events, right? So we have a number of events in market, and then we grow everything around that. We grow the fan experiences, we grow the media part of it, we give the ability to people to buy their, you know, their, you know, branded merchandise. We give them the ability to associate themselves with the brand and with the personalities around that brand that they people connect to. So I think it's important for us to support that fandom and to help it grow even bigger. And I think it's in the modern age when shorter content works better, I think the fact that, you know, we have the ability to generate those that shorter content, that may be well be in our favor compared to other types of sports.
All right, so there you go, a name you might not have known before, Andre Gromkowski. Now you'll know. That's what the MMA Roadshow does for you.
If you don't know, now you know.
There you go. That's what's up. All right, let's wrap up this card, Seb. You know, the final four fights on here, I will say, I'm really the one I'm most excited about, no question about it, Merab Dvalishvili versus Tarian Ware. First, Merab is just a great dude, man. I've enjoyed talking to him. He had some tough luck the last time out. There's no question about it. But great camp. You know, he's got the Ray Longo and Matt Serra corner here for him. I actually saw those guys at breakfast this morning. They had just arrived on the plane. So, that guy is fun to watch. And, of course, his corner is fun to have as well. But Tarian Ware has had kind of a hard road in the UFC. But you look at the people that he's fought and the fights that he's had.
Well, he's put up in these lose fights. Like, we want you to lose to this up-and-coming guy fights.
Cody Stammen, Sean O'Malley, and Tom Duquesnoy.
Three guys the UFC are hot on.
I mean, think about that. Like, that is insane. And he's put up good fights. I mean, he's gone to a decision with all three of them.
One could argue that he won against Duquesnoy.
I agree, man. So, I'm high on Tarian Ware. So, I mean, I think it would be very easy for people to say, guys, 0-3, what the hell do I care about? Listen, if you haven't watched the fights, even the fight with Stammen was a good fight. I remember, I believe that was the first fight of the night, if I remember right that night. And I remember thinking, man, this kid lost, but I like him. I don't know, man. That's definitely out of those the fight that I'm most excited about.
For me, it's a completely different one because I mentioned earlier for you that there are, you know, undefeated Russian debutants, and everyone's got their eye on Alexei Kunchenko. And to be fair, that is with merit. That that is one you should have your eye on. But Adam Yandiev, Yandiev.
I heard a lot of people. I heard a lot of people say this guy's the truth.
Every single fight he's won by first round finish. And he's from one of those autonomous Russian republics. It's not Dagestan. It's not Chechnya. It's something that begins with an I. I can't remember it. So you probably lost all your listeners from there because I didn't credit them. But it's got a cool flag, though. I'll give you that. With like this weird little trifecta thing in the middle. Either way,
that's a hard-hitting insight that you don't get anywhere else.
Exactly. You got to come to me for that kind of like irrelevant bullshit information. So when you got somebody who's like 8-0 or 9-0 with all first-round finishes, the question is always, of course, you know, competition.
Right.
And to be fair, I mean, I think he faced a debutant in his fifth fight or fourth fight, something like that. But after that, it's been some pretty, in terms of record anyway, solid competition. And I've seen some of his fights. He's not the most glamorous or technical fighter. It's definitely more power than it is technique, but god damn it if there's not a lot of power. I say keep your eye on this fight. He's got a tough test ahead of him. Jordan Johnson, also undefeated.
Yep.
I think that's a great fight, to be honest.
Ingushetia, by the way. Ingushetia?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And it has like a little fidget spinner in the middle of it.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, the fidget spinner in the middle. Yeah, but
I probably shouldn't say that until I'm out of here. I can see that. I cannot imagine the folks from the Republic.
It's probably easier to get away with that than a gay joke here. So,
wow. We'll just edit that part. Cold Coffee, if you could cut that last part out, please. We want to make sure this up stays alive. Thanks, Cold Coffee. Freshly added. No, listen, it is going to be interesting. There's a lot of names, again, that I think people aren't going to be familiar with, but this could be the beginning. You know, you heard Andre say it, and you heard Dave say it earlier, too. I mean, this is just going to help foster growth on the Russian scene, man. And I think it's going to be just, you know, more people being funneled, you know, a pipeline. So I think, was it you? You said you talked to Dan Hardy earlier today and said, like, you know, there could be a Khabib in every division. Or
or he said the Russians are going to take over most of the divisions.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true. I mean, this is a hotbed. And I mean, and these are battle-tested dudes. There are people that have impressive records. You know, it's not, you know, they're coming to the UFC at 4-0. You know, they're 9-0, they're 12-0, they're 15-1. You know,
they're,
I mean,
18-0 in some.
That's it, man. I mean, so I think that people are going to have to get used to it. You know,
yeah.
These are people that you're going to have to watch. And, you know, maybe it was easy before to say, well, that guy's name's hard to pronounce and he doesn't even speak English anyway, so why do I care? And if Khabib is able to beat Conor and just keep the growth going, I mean, how will that not show, as these guys said, you know, how will that not show the path of you know, where people can grow and what they can do? So,
I mean, I remember reading an article from, I want to say MMA Junkie, but I'm not confident.
It probably was. If it was high quality, if it was.
Well, I'm not. Either way, it was about Khabib Nurmagomedov fighting against Thiago Tavares, which was, I mean, for many, his sort of like coming out party.
Right.
And I remember reading how, like, in the article, it said, like, oh, we can't really pronounce his name, but let's call him Normie for now.
Right.
And it's like, well, guess what? Everybody knows his name now.
That's funny.
And even if you don't, you can call him Khabib. You know Khabib time. It's
that is
like,
true. Nobody calls him Normie anymore, really, do they?
No.
They used to, man. Couldn't say that.
Yeah, but now it's, awesome. It's all about the Khabib.
Well, listen, I'm excited.
Also, I got the best business suggestion for Khabib ever.
Yeah?
You ready for this?
Let's hear it.
Start up a fast food joint. Kebab Nurmagomedov.
Wow.
Am I right?
It's almost like Simon Head is in the room right now, dude. He sent us a message earlier to say hello.
Maybe he infected
me
that way.
Dad joke of a that it's almost like he's sitting here right now. That's phenomenal. On that note, listen, I'm excited for this event. Again, I get it. Listen, it is on Fight Pass. For folks back home in the States, it's going to be a morning card, which I always, to be honest, I like it, man.
You can be done.
Dude. You can wake up in the morning, kick it, watch some fights. You get the Fight Pass pacing, which means we're going to be just blasting through fights.
Watching fights while eating brunch is the fucking best.
You can't beat it. Then you can have your evening to yourself. You can still go out on Saturday night. And again,
and it's like considered okay to have a drink with brunch.
That's
so it's
all
like,
right. Exactly. You can have a drink anytime, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. That's why I love this show.
Damn right. I'm excited to see it. It is. I mean, I do. We haven't been in the building yet. We're going to go check it out tomorrow. I mean, again, it's set for demolition, so that should tell you something about the condition of what we can expect. But,
well, it might get demolished before we get there, depending on how things go Saturday night.
Dude, just the cheesiness is just exuding from you, man. The beer is setting in on the vegan man here. The frosty beverages are doing their
work. The dad jokes are piling up.
All right, man. Well, before you embarrass yourself too much, I'll just get us out of here so we can go hang out in Red Square a little bit. To everybody else, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.